Welcome to Is This Real Life? A Bravo podcast that relates our favorite shows to our own lives and the world around us. I'm your host, Mandy Slutsker. Let's get to it. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in. This episode is so fantastic. I think you are all going to love it. I have Jeff Epstein on the podcast. I find him absolutely hilarious. And we have a really interesting conversation, a lot about Housewives nostalgia, because he's not really watching a lot of the current Real Housewives. But we talk also about stan culture and the Housewives and really wanting to make watching the Housewives more fun again. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy the conversation. Because we didn't get into a lot of what goes on this week in Bravo, I'm just going to give you guys a little bit of a breakdown, but I've got Jeff in the show notes. So if you want to just skip to him, then go right ahead. So this week in Bravo, we had a couple crazy stories breaking. So the biggest being that the Real Housewives of Dallas reunion was filmed, also with Summer House, and Carrie actually got COVID. And since she was sitting next to Brandi Redmond on the flight up to New York, both her and Brandi had to quarantine. And so they were Zooming into the reunion while the other housewives were physically present at the reunion. I'm very curious to see how it all goes. It also looked like the other Carrie, Carrie Duber, was there, but I'm told it was due to some other event. But I would absolutely love if they were announcing that Carrie Duber was back on the show, or that they were doing a Married to Medicine spinoff with Tiffany Moon and Carrie Duber, because I would be all about that. Also, Andy shared that there's going to be a special Watch What Happens Live episode with a lot of the children that were featured on The Real Housewives, and that two of the housewives called him to complain that their children were not invited. We don't know who, but I would really be interested in hearing your guesses. And then with Jen Shah, it appears she has not gotten the $250,000 to the Southern District of New York like she said she would. So I believe she was given a 6-day extension, but she's been seen online selling her Hermes and Louis Vuitton bags. So we'll see what happens there. When it comes to what happened this week in Bravo, I'm going to share just a little bit of my thoughts, not a full breakdown. So for the Real Housewives of Atlanta, I feel like we're starting to get into, you know, Puppygate territory, you know, Denise and Brandi sort of territory from Beverly Hills on Atlanta, with whether or not Portia actually had sex with the stripper Bolo. It's getting a little bit tiresome. I think the viewers are tired. I think the women on the show are really tired. But I'm more interested in the behind the scenes. So I would actually like to see, you know, Tanya say, you know, I'm not filming anymore, and want to see some of these conversations that they're having, which are clearly happening off camera. It appears that Candy had acknowledged what happened off camera, but wouldn't do it on camera. And actually, interesting enough, I am going to be in the virtual audience for Watch What Happens Live, if you're listening to this Sunday, on Sunday night. And Candy is one of the guests on the show, and I actually get to ask her a question, not during the Watch What Happens Live taping, but during the after show. And I think you guys should tune in. What I was curious about is the real reason why Kenya is so fixated on what happened between Portia and Bolo. And for me, my thinking was maybe Kenya sees how all the rest of the cast are so loyal to Portia and they're not saying what really happened on camera. And Kenya feels like, you know what, if that were me, everyone would say what happened. No one would show me loyalty. And so that's sort of what I asked Candy, and you should definitely tune in and watch the after show to hear her answer on that. So the ladies of The Real Housewives of Atlanta are still in New Orleans. I just couldn't get over that there was a hurricane coming and no one seemed to acknowledge it or pay attention or care besides Candy. So like Candy sees it's coming. She knows that, you know, power could go out. They may get stuck there. There may be flights not going in. So she hightails out of there to make sure she can make her shooting schedule. And we also see after this huge fight between Portia and Marlo that Portia actually leaves early as well. And I was kind of shocked that she didn't bring Shamia with her. I don't really know why. I always feel like Shamia is a better friend to Portia than Portia is to Shamia. And of course, the women all embarrass themselves in front of Big Frida, who is teaching them how to make a traditional meal in New Orleans, and the dinner just completely goes awry. I'm sure you all saw it. I don't know. I thought everything was okay. I can't tell if Marlo was just trying to drum up drama because there were cameras there, or if she was just pissed that Portia lied to her. To her face, because last episode she said, "Portia, did you sleep with the stripper?" And Portia said, "No." Now, why would Portia say yes on camera? Like, I don't know. The whole thing is just, I don't know, they're all trying to get her to admit what happened, and she's just not going to. And so it probably makes sense to move on. Speaking of moving on, I really think that The Real Housewives of Dallas needs to move on from Carrie. I am so tired of her. I know we've all been tired of her, but this episode was so offensive to watch how she was treating that Bigfoot hunter, Charles. I mean, it's a crazy premise. They go to Oklahoma and they say they're camping, but they're definitely not camping. They're staying in a very nice house that has a kind of cabin woods-like feel, but it's most definitely not camping. And Stephanie has this guy, Charles, who's a Bigfoot hunter, come and they go in the middle of the night and they try and find Bigfoot, whatever. The entire time, Carrie is railing against this guy because he is a avid hunter and is saying how horrible it is to hunt and how these innocent animals. Meanwhile, she just ate a hot dog 20 minutes earlier. I mean, it's absolutely wild. And she's being really rude to him. And, you know, he was a guest that was kind of invited to where the women were. And Stephanie is embarrassed. And she keeps telling Carrie, like, "Can you stop? Please, you're embarrassing me." And Carrie is just absolutely ignoring it. Even makes a comment about Charles having a small penis at one point. I mean, it was horrendous. Stephanie ends up crying because of how horrible she felt and something that maybe Charles must have said to her afterwards where he felt like he had done something wrong. And it just shouldn't take all of this to get Carrie to realize that she is rude and she is obnoxious and she doesn't listen to anyone. And I'm just so effing sick of her. I don't even want to spend any more time talking about her. But I think what this episode showed is that Tiffany can be fun. And I'm really tired of this narrative that Tiffany is somehow not fun or not a girl's girl or can't hang with this group. She most definitely can. And I think she's lovely. And we're seeing her get along with Brandy and Carrie and everyone. So it'll be interesting to see at the reunion why everything has broken down. Because from her point of view, she probably felt like she really built friendships and look at things are getting better. But I'm sure watching back, the women are feeling so much heat. And instead of just taking accountability and being like, "You know what? I had a hard time with the new girl. I'm owning that and I'm trying to be better." Instead, they seem to just be frustrated with her and mad at Deandra, and I don't know. Going on to New Jersey, I am so glad that The Real Housewives of New Jersey filmed in the summer, because there is nothing I want to watch less than The Real Housewives of New Jersey filming in November, December, January, February. Like, seeing, it's like a gray wasteland. But in the summer, it looks lovely. I mean, they all go to the Jersey Shore. The houses look great. They're on the boat. They're having fun. They're by the pool. They're having drinks. It looks awesome. I plead with Bravo to keep filming Jersey in the summer from now on. Now, we also see, this is totally unrelated to any part of the plot line, Frank Catania's bagel order, and he tells Dolores to get his usual, which is egg whites, turkey bacon, bacon on a plain bagel, scooped. Now, that means that they scoop out the doughy part of the bagel and just leave the crust. And I'm telling you, as a Jew, like, this bagel order is anti-Semitic. Frank Catania, I finally found something wrong with Frank Catania. I love him, but his bagel order sucks. So it's really fun, actually, I think, watching the couples interact on this trip. It's always interesting to see Bill with the guys because I think he's so much more likable than I originally thought he was going to be. And, you know, we see Melissa and Joe get into this fight, and there's so much subtext to the fight. You know, he gets pissed at her because she starts walking ahead of him, but I think he's just really upset about the next day they're having a tribute to his dad who passed away. And I know that, you know, everyone says, oh, it's things with their marriage. And I do think that there are things going on in their marriage. But I also think that when you're dealing with a funeral or an anniversary of a funeral or talking about someone's death and honoring their life, like, weird stuff happens. I remember when we had the unveiling for my mother's grave, when we were on the way back, my brother like freaked out because a button fell off of his coat, and he like was freaking out that he couldn't find that button and he was never going to have another button. And just, it can make people kind of go a little nuts. So that's what happened. Joe Gorga went kind of nuts. And what I think the subtext is, you know, he's saying that Melissa isn't around enough and she's changed, and she's saying, you know, I have a job now, I work, I'm not always home, I'm not making dinner for him. You know, when I was 24 and married him, I'm not that same person. But, and Andy Cohen alluded to this on Watch What Happens Live, that it appears that they're talking about the show and how she's become this big star on the show. And that's something that's frustrating to him. But he's a star on the show as well, right? Everyone knows who he is and they know who she is. So I'm wondering if it has to do with money, if she's now the primary breadwinner and that bothers him. Because I can't think of exactly what else it would be. Also, their kids aren't young anymore. So, you know, she doesn't have to be at home trying to raise the kids. They're going to school. They're, you know, out and about. She's doing a lot of her own thing. And so I think that's what it has to do with. But I would love to hear your guys' thoughts. I'm also kind of weirded out by the pranks that they keep having on each other, that one of them is cheating. I don't know. Maybe it's fine for them and it makes them feel good to see the other jealous or upset. But I think it's kind of deranged. And then, of course, we see the celebration of life for Nano, and I think it's absolutely beautiful. It reminds me that they actually are a family and that they do love each other, and that, you know, Melissa's kids and Teresa's kids are actually seem close. And I don't know, I feel like it's very compelling to watch the families. And I don't think I really thought that much maybe a few seasons ago, but I'm definitely feeling it now. Okay, guys, let's round it out with Summer House. So this is definitely also a very coupley episode. So we've got Des coming in to be with Hannah. We've got Robert coming to be with Danielle. We see Steven coming back to try and win Lindsay back. And then we hear a bit more about what's happening with Paige and Perry. So Lindsay lets Steven back in the house almost as if nothing really happened. And everyone seems to be a little bit confused. But what I was really interested is kind of seeing all these couples, and then Paige seems to be unable to have really tough conversations about her feelings with Perry. But again, just like Jersey, I feel like there's so much subtext about the show, and that arguments are really about the show, but they can't say they're about the show. And what I think, and what is probably very obvious, is that Paige's boyfriend Perry doesn't want to be on camera. And so she finally tells him, you know, I'd really like you to come to the house just for a drink. And he says no, and he's busy with work. And I get it. Like, he's got a real job. He doesn't want to expose himself on TV. But for the kind of work that she does as a social media influencer, her being on TV is really important for her. And that's not going to change if that's her career path. And so I don't know how they could be together long term if she's trying to have a very kind of public lifestyle and he wants to be completely private. So we also, you know, get to see Dez and Hannah, and they have sex all over the house and are super weird and gross about it. I mean, they go and, you know, have sex in Kyle and Amanda's bathroom, which I think is disrespectful and also just weird. Like, why not just go to your room? You have a room. You also have a bathroom. I know that the bathroom is where there are no cameras, which is why they go have sex in there. But the whole thing is really odd. And I think it also makes Danielle feel uncomfortable because her new guy, Robert, is there. And, you know, they haven't seen each other in 5 weeks and she doesn't want to just jump into bed with him. And the whole dynamic is really weird. It's also kind of weird when they're all having dinner together and Dez says that him and Hannah slept together on the second date. It was just the way he said it was really crass. And I don't know. It appears, though, that Dez is actually quite a famous comedian over in Ireland and does a lot of bits about how, like, the Irish behave and act from an American point of view, because he was born in New York and then moved over to Ireland when he was in high school. And he's back in New York now. I don't know. I don't really know what I think about Dez and Hannah, other than I think Hannah really lied a lot about kind of the timetable with Dez and what her real feelings were for Luke and tried to drum it up for a storyline. And I think Luke was completely bamboozled. I do not think Luke is completely innocent of everything. I just don't think he did what Hannah says he did in the timeline that she says that he did it, if that makes any sense. I've said this before, but everyone should go back and listen to Chanel in the City. She had Luke on her podcast and he gives kind of his version of things, and it made a lot of sense to me. So I would encourage everyone to listen. It also made me sad to see how happy Amanda is for Hannah and how rude and disrespectful Hannah is to Amanda. It must be heartbreaking for Amanda to watch all of this back and realize Hannah was really never her friend. So the rest of them have a boat day. Everyone has a lot of fun. Paige gets blackout drunk, and everyone seems to notice that Paige is so much more fun without Hannah. And I hope we get to see more of that. I know she's going to be on Winterhouse, I think, sans Hannah, so that will be an opportunity for us to get to know her without Hannah. And I agree, she's a lot more likable without the other member of the Giggly Squad. So those are some of my thoughts from this week in Bravo. So now we're going to get into my conversation with Jeff. So it's a little bit different than some of the other conversations I've had with guests. And we talk about some really serious real life issues, including addiction and mental health and recovery. So I encourage you all to have an open mind listening to it and to be kind in the comments. We also talk a lot about kind of how housewives social media has gotten really toxic and mean. And I was saying that one of my goals is to make Housewives and Bravo fun again, right? Because Bravo should be fun. And I feel like when everyone gets team so-and-so or team whoever, it just gets kind of nasty. And so I would love to hear from you guys about what you think that we can all do as viewers to make Housewives fun and a little bit less toxic. So would love to hear all of your input on that. As always, be sure to subscribe, give a good review if you enjoy the podcast, and follow me at Mandy Slutsker on social media. Be sure to tune in to Watch What Happens Live to see me as a virtual audience member. They told me I couldn't have art in the background, so I changed my background to one of those weird sort of Zoom Skype backgrounds with hearts. And sometimes when I'm clapping, I don't know if you can like see my hands. So I may look a little bit bizarre, but hopefully you guys will enjoy that episode of Watch What Happens Live. Without further ado, here is my chat with Jeff. Jeff. Hi, everyone. I'm here with Jeff Epstein from the podcast Manic with Jeff Epstein. He is one of the funniest people I have ever seen on social media. I love your Instagram and your Twitter, and I just think you're great. So I asked you to come on the podcast to talk about housewives, but also just to shoot the shit. How are you doing?
I love it. Thank you for having me on. That was such a delightful introduction, so complimentary. I'm on a real high here. I'm doing well, and it's funny because you said, yeah, talk about Housewives, and then when you asked me, I was like, I don't think she realizes that I don't watch Housewives anymore.
No, but I want to talk about that, and I also want to talk about old school Housewives, because I was telling you that I went, I tried to go back and figure out when I started watching Beverly Hills, and it turns out it was sometime during season 3, because I got roped into Vanderpump Rules at the same time as everyone else, but I missed seasons 1 and 2, and so I went back to watch them, and watching them as an actual adult now, I didn't feel like I was really an adult back then, is fascinating and so dark.
Season 1 is really dark, and the limo fight, I always think that too. There's the dynamics between siblings is so dark, so it's like that to me is what was so captivating. I feel like that's a big part of what's missing in later seasons. But Beverly Hills was my gateway. It's actually how I started watching Housewives. I was never interested in it because I was oh, Housewives, whatever. But for some reason, to me, Beverly Hills was a celebrity version.
Yeah.
And I knew who the Richard sisters were and things like that. So that's what grabbed me. And that's what I watched from season 1 on was Beverly Hills. That's how they got me. But I didn't even start watching other Housewives until 5 years later when I happened to be catching some of OC. And then I started watching a little bit more of them. But yeah, it was strictly Beverly Hills for a long time.
Yeah, I started with just the California ones because, when you live on the East Coast and the weather's not great in the winter and it's you dream of sunshine and having a pool in your backyard. And so I was really into the Beverly Hills and the OC stuff. And then I got roped into Vanderpump Rules from their very first episode because I was watching Beverly Hills and I was like, oh my God, they're my age and they're such a mess. I can't look away. And then I got into New York and then eventually all the others.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it was the same thing where I was it was during the cancer thing. I remember it was 2015 and I was home and I started just watching that and I thought, okay, I'm into this. And I kind of got into OC. And then it was in the years following, super, super dark years of my life when all I was doing was laying in bed, doing drugs or withdrawing. And so that's when I started diving into more. And I realized I really liked New York, but I was hesitant about the East Coast ones as well, because I'm actually from the East Coast, but I don't even want to see the East Coast and I don't like it. And same with Jersey. And that's still one that I've kind of hardly watched because I don't like it. And I don't like seeing New Jersey. And to me, they're so enamored with the idea of fame in Hollywood and being on TV that it feels a bit try hard.
Okay.
So yeah. And then Atlanta, I've only seen the only full season I've ever watched of Atlanta was 9. I've dipped my toe into some later ones, but none of the earlier stuff wasn't into. New York, even I've never seen seasons 1 through 4. I started watching live when it was 7 and then went back for 5 and 6. OC and Beverly Hills are really the only ones I've seen. And I feel like people think that I'm more a bigger Housewives fan than I am, because it's just the stuff that I was a fan of. I'm really a fan.
You're so into. But I love that you got into the OC and stuff when you were at a dark moment, because I feel like I was always kind of interested in Housewives and watching Vanderpump Rules, but it was after this super dark time in my life where my mom died, my apartment burned down, I had no home, I was living in an Airbnb, and Bravo, we had Bravo. That was what it was. And I could barely get through the day. I was such a mess. And the only time I could really zone out was when I was watching The Housewives and Watch What Happens Live. And it was so ridiculous. And I couldn't handle any scripted TV or dramas. I'm still not great with it because it's brings up tough subjects that I don't want to deal with. I have tough subjects in my day-to-day life. I don't want to see sad shit on TV, you know?
I think for me, it's funny because it was the same thing where I was in a dark place and I actually just couldn't focus on anything. So reality TV was okay. And it was just kind of this running channel in the back, and it was something. Now, I don't really watch much TV at all, and I hate to be one of those people that says that, like, I don't really watch TV, but I don't. But I kind of like to, at this point, have like one scripted show in my life. So it's come full circle. Like, now I'm back to that.
Okay.
Because otherwise I find with the reality show, I am kind of on my phone, and I've been looking, I look for a specific scripted show to like get my attention and be really zoned in. Cause once you're really in one of those, it's like, whoa. But it also takes me, like, I'll shuffle through 10 before I find one that I like. Like, 5 minutes into the first episode of that one, no. 5 minutes into the episode of that one, no. But yeah.
The last scripted show I got into was Succession.
You couldn't get into it.
Oh man. Once I realized it was like a dark comedy and not a drama, it hit completely different. It was not meant to be taken as a drama.
Okay, I need to watch with a new lens.
Yes.
Also, but if I remember correctly, is it political? I don't like political stuff.
Then you should never visit me in D.C.
I would say that to me, D.C. sounds like frigid hell. I can't even, like, I don't like any of that. I don't like the aesthetic of it. I don't like the weather. I don't even like the name. Sorry. No. No. And also, like, my grandparents, like, my dad's from Baltimore. I don't even like the accents in the area.
Is some politics in it, but it's more just this incredibly dark and twisted family dynamic. That's really what it is. And that it's what draws you in. It's like these four siblings and this aging, you know, big, like, he's like a Murdoch type guy, and it's like, who's going to be next and taking over everything? And all the siblings are like backbiting and trying to one up each other, but they all like feel like secretly like they're not good enough for their dad. And it's really intense. And if you have ever like lived in New York City or anything, it shows you this part of New York that's like excessive wealth that I never really get to see, like I imagine from Gossip Girl and stuff, but seeing it play out is also really fascinating, like taking helicopters places and like things like that. It's good. It's definitely, I feel like you would like it, especially if you have like a dark, twisted sense of humor.
It's so funny that you mentioned like the New York City thing, but and like the Gossip Girl thing, because my experience in New York City was that I was working for Blake Lively.
I think I remember that from one of your podcasts.
Yeah, it was like
saga.
There's a lot to that saga and stuff like that. But I also don't like New York either. And something about like, yeah, I'm very turned off by like names or when I see first type of settings or like a dreary type of vibe. I'm like, I don't know, like I could try again. A show that I just finished was Your Honor.
Ooh, I don't even know what that is.
Okay, I'm going to just quickly tell you that it's going to be the quickest synopsis ever. But basically, hold on, I feel like I have the burp. Sorry, I was drinking this fucking Spindrift. It's so rude. I have to not drink them when I'm doing podcasts. I don't know what I'm doing. Okay, so Bryan Cranston is a judge.
Oh, my dad's obsessed with that guy.
Okay, he's great. And then he has a son who gets in a hit and run and kills this kid on a motorcycle. But the kid that he hits is the son of the biggest crime family. So then his dad, the judge, works so hard to cover it up. And it's a 10-episode limited series. And it's honest to God. And say, I was so stressed. I kept waking up. I kept having to go for long drives. I kept having to do like a lot of like, genuinely, I finished it. And I had to go for like an hour drive because I couldn't even like, I was pacing around my apartment.
I hate that feeling. I couldn't even finish Dead to Me. Because I was anxious. I was like,
I love Dead to Me.
I was like, just tell them what you did. Come clean.
Okay, no. And so I get it. Like, I actually, and I would like watch my ex boyfriend. He'd be like, stop. Like, stop. You're being annoying. It's a fucking show. Because I'm like, oh my God. And then,
no,
like,
I get so wrapped up.
But that's what I mean. You're so wrapped up and you're so focused. And it's so like, you're in it. Mm-hmm. I'm telling, because like, otherwise, I don't know about you, but like, if I'm watching a housewives show, like, I'm on my phone.
I do both. Like, if I'm on my phone, I'm watching what other people are saying about Housewives, right? Like, mm-hmm. if I'm watching it live. But if I'm doing old school, I've actually gone back and I've been watching the first few seasons of Married to Medicine. And that is worth watching with no phone. It is so good.
I think I tried it for a second and wasn't into it. I've tried a lot of other Bravo ones. Like, I don't do Southern Charm. I don't do Vanderpump Rule.
That's fair.
You're like, okay.
No. What I really wanted to ask you about, though, before we, because I have a lot of Housewives questions, is your name. So, Jeff Epstein, you were born Jeff Epstein, but obviously, you know, people recognize your name differently now.
The climate's changed.
I've always been a Slutsker, right? I had to live with it my whole life. And that's also been interesting. So, like, what are some of your craziest, like, name stories? Yours are probably more from the last few years. Mine are long and span many years of school.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, the thing is that I actually always knew who he was because, like, when you have a certain, like, whatever your name is, you always want to say, like, who do I share a name with? And so I remember even my twin brother would always be like, oh my God, you share a name with this, like, billionaire pedophile, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, a few years ago, it, like, blew up into this whole thing. And I keep thinking it's going to die down. And then he fucking kills himself. I'm like, oh my God. And then it keeps going. But it's like, I literally went to the dentist a month ago and I'm laying in the chair and the dentist walks in and he's like, will the real Jeffrey Epstein please stand up? And then, like, just goes on this, like,
whole tangent.
And then I went to this other procedure. I feel like I'm always, I was just at a procedure before this. So I feel like you must think that I live at the doctor's or something. But I was at this other thing and I'm trying to have a consultation. And for the first, he kept brainstorming about names like that I could change it to. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I'm like, I have to leave. Like, we've now been here for 20 minutes. What are we talking about? Or like, I think it's been a much bigger issue. Like when I first changed even my Instagram handle, so I lost 10,000 followers because people thought I did it as a joke. And they're like, how dare you be so disrespectful to all the victims of his crimes and blah, blah, blah. And I'll still get really nasty messages like that. Or like comments of like, oh my God, bro, or like change your name, bro. Like that's probably where it's actually the most annoying is in the social media space.
Oh, that's so annoying. See, with Slutsker, okay, so going back to social media, when Facebook first started, it was only people who went to certain universities that were like invited. Okay, so my university was like one of the, you know, first 25 schools that was invited. And, you know, back in the day before your parents were on Facebook, before anything, it was just a bunch of 20-year-old college students. And so people used to get drunk or whatever and type in slut into the search thing. And I would come up. And messages I would get, they were actually hilarious. Like, guys wrote poems, like full on poems. I had like all kinds of propositions. It was insane. And it was very like funny. And I did stand up for a little bit in DC and like my whole bit was like slut was like the first thing. And then there was another Mandy in our group of friends in college. And so she was called Mandy and then her last name and I was called Mandy Slut. And then when all the parents met me, they're like, oh, is that Mandy, like, last name, or like, or Mandy Slut? And then they met my brother and like, oh, that's Ben Slut. And then my parents, they're like, Mr. and Mrs. Slut. It was like, just became like a thing.
Like, I kind of like it. It's kind of fun. And also, like, I aspire to be a slut. I'm not, but I wish I was.
You know.
I'm too nervous to be.
Same. I've got that nervous Jewish energy.
Yeah, and I'm like, you're going to give me a disease or blah, blah, blah. Like, we want to be sluts, though. We really do.
Right, we do. And we then do. In high school, I went to Israel, like every Jew.
You did the birthday trip?
No, I did. Like, I lived in Israel in high school. My parents sent me in the middle of the Intifada to go live, like, in a dorm with other students. And it was so fun, right? But it was a little crazy because there was a war going on. And the guy who was in charge of our dorm, he would shout, Slut, like all the time. And so it just became like my nickname. So everyone would just be like, Slut, anytime they saw me.
What's so funny is that like I had a certain friend group that like we actually used to pronounce slut as slut. We'd be like, you little slut. And so now I'm just like thinking, yeah, when you said slut, I was like, okay. Wow.
Who also has a shit time? I was thinking of you on Twitter. So there's a guy named Matt Gertz on Twitter who he works for like a media company and he has a ton of followers. But now all the stuff is going on with Matt Gaetz, who's a politician who's potentially involved in like sex trafficking and like being with like a teenage girl. And so anytime something happens with Matt Gaetz, Matt Gertz gets tagged by like thousands and thousands of people, and he'll spend the entire day just responding, not me, not the same guy, not me.
Oh, no. I actually didn't know either of them or either of those names. I'm super out of the know. Should I know that's a scandal?
Oh, no. I love it. I feel like, so the only scandal I really care about is the Jen Shah scandal. So want to get your thoughts on that. But I know everything that happens in politics because I work in that in DC. But tell me, like, what the fuck do you think about Jen Shah?
So it's so crazy. I actually was getting like so sick of it because I was like, well, I mean, fair. Like, it floods your time. My issue, and like, I need to actually probably just unfollow a lot of like accounts, is that you go through and like they're just posting the same headline over and over again. And it's the same thing over and over again. And I'm like, okay, guys, this is enough. I'm like, okay. No, I actually do think it's crazy. I didn't watch Salt Lake City, so I'm not like, I don't have like the investment towards it. As like, it's not like if like BB girl Ramona Singer just got arrested, like it would be so different. But so I don't have that attachment to her, but it is nuts. And like federal shit is so different. And I will say, I also like to say with like the innocent and proven guilty until proven guilty thing.
Yeah.
Just because for many reasons, my intuition tells me like she's up to some shit. And yeah. I also think too, like, why would you go on a show if you know you have those skeletons? Like, I remember thinking like, would I even go on a show because I had skeletons in my closet about just like past arrests that were like wrapped up, meaning just on my record. Like, even that scares me. But to know that you're like in the middle of doing a crime that large on a federal level, and like, here's what I actually think will happen. Like, Stewart's going to throw her under the bus.
Totally.
And everyone else is going to throw her under the bus to plead out. She'll still plead out. Like, my guess is she gets a year or two.
I think it'll be more.
You never know. It depends. Like, I didn't see enough of the like records and like the evidence they have on her and like how it starts playing out. You just think, like, even if they say, like, okay, the max sentence 30 years, things like that, and it's white collar and you kind of play things out, like,
yeah,
you can feed them out pretty low.
But I just think she's such a narcissist, she won't plead.
No, she might try to go to trial and fight it. I don't know. She really bothered me. I think that I watched a few episodes in the beginning and I was just like, I'm not into this, but she strikes me as she's a tryhard.
It's more than tryhard, though. It's like, that's what I thought at first, but no, she believes in her bullshit. Like you were saying, you know, when you're doing crimes like that, why would you go on a show? But I think there is a part of it that you get so brazen in committing those crimes and thinking, well, I haven't got caught yet, and it's been this many years. Like, I'm just going to keep testing the boundaries, like me with my fake ID in college. Like, once I got in a certain bar, I was like, okay, I've gotten in this bar. Now I'm going to try that bar where, like, they always card people. Like, I think I can handle it, you know? And it's like you get a rush out of it. Now, that's probably, like, the biggest crime I've committed.
No, that is actually a good analogy, is the fake ID thing. And I remember also pushing the limit.
You do. And it's part of, like, your brain isn't even fully developed at that point. And I feel like something's off with her brain as well. Like, she's just not, it's not sinking in. And her level of narcissism, I don't think, lets her, like, take in facts.
No, and she could very well even still be doing it. I mean, listen, I do have a more serious example as far as, like, I remember I was arrested for something really serious. It was in, like, August 2016. And then, like, less than a year later, I was arrested for the exact same thing. Like, a felony, and, like, a lot was happening. And like, yeah, I was still, like, I remember even, like, wrapping up the first one and then doing that same thing again. And so I see what you're saying.
You push boundaries, especially when the consequence isn't as bad as you thought it would be. Or if you don't face a consequence, you're like, oh, I could do that again.
Oh, I knew too that, like, I was under investigation for things and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And it's that whatever was happening. And I still was like, yeah, you're pushing it. You're pushing it. So I did. Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't know.
Maybe you are.
Maybe I'm a sleuth.
Yeah.
A sleuthing sleuth.
Maybe we switch from, like, politics to crime.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I can see a future for me.
Me too.
Well, I want to get your thoughts on, like, a ton of different Housewives things, just going back to the ones that you watch. And I just love hearing your opinions on stuff. So there was this thing going around on social media recently that was like, what are four Real Housewives that describe your personality and why? And I've been thinking about this for weeks because there's not many Housewives that I feel like have similar personality traits to me.
Or if you look, because I did this, I'm actually trying to pull it up. what it was like, I took very specific facets. Like, I might have one out of 1 million of Ramona Singer's facets, but like one of those I really identify with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So what facets of which Housewives do you identify with?
Wait, I'm trying to find this. Fuck. I remember it's so funny too, because I was actually, speaking of Annabelle, I had texted her and she had said like, oh, this person, blah, blah, blah. So I said I was Denise Richards, Sonia Morgan, Brandy Glanville, and Bethany Frankel.
Ooh, so what about Denise?
I'm super, like, kind of trash bag, don't give a fuck, ragamuffin, like...
Ragamuffin.
Very, very, very ragamuffin. I'm always, like, in my board shorts at fancy places, and, like, I don't give a fuck. So that... She had even said that. She's like, you have to do Denise Richards because you're a ragamuffin. And I think there's something... I'm kind of that, like... There's a little, like... Like, she's so sweet and nice and has all this stuff, but there's, like, something, there's, you know, there's, like, an edge.
There's something darker. I mean, when she was like, I'm fucking Denise Richards, you were like, oh, she does know, like, the pull and the sway that she has. And she pulls it out, like, every so often and makes you think.
That and just even the side of, like, you know, she's married to Charlie Sheen, like, there's something kind of wild. And so I identify with that type of trait of, like, yeah, being so sweet and whatever, but, like, there's something. And that kind of, I don't give a fuck attitude. So, yeah, Denise.
Then what about Sonia? Sonia's actually my favorite housewife, I think.
I love Sonia. She's like my number, she's in like my top three. She's not my favorite, she's not my number one just because she's like, in terms of like actually getting involved with drama, it's different, but she's just so funny and I love her. She's great character work. Sonia, because I think that I'm a bit of a clown myself and I think I'm kind of just floozy and...
You would like lose a tooth on the dance floor.
100%. Literally, I'm getting bloody noses everywhere, and I'm just like, "Oh my god!" literally everywhere. So that's her, and then Brandy, I would say also because the unfiltered mouth, and a little bit, of, and both those two, I would say the partying aspect, or like the
Brandy definitely had no problem doing any of that stuff on camera too. Yeah, where she was like, I just took a Xanax and now I'm going to have a bunch of wine. I was like, you're saying this on like camera?
But like, that's how I am too. So I would say, so like that identify. And then Bethany, like, I can be kind of ruthless, to be honest with you. Only to like people I know, I feel like.
Only to people I know and love.
Oh, yeah. If I know you, that's why I'm super mean to you. If I don't know you, I'm very nice to you. So yeah, that. And there's something like, there's a bossy quality to me.
Okay.
I'm aware of it.
Those are good housewives, though, to choose. Like, I've been, like, trying to think, and all the housewives I chose are ones that are, like, other people would call boring.
Who?
Okay. Wendy from Osifo? Real Housewives of Potomac.
I actually love Wendy.
Yeah, I really like her, and I have sort of similar interests as her, and... I don't know. I just feel like I'm very Wendy-like. I have Candy from Atlanta.
The hustle?
I don't know if it's the hustle. I just feel like I can stay neutral on a lot of things, like where like everyone else is like, you got to pick a side, you got to pick a side, you got to do this. And I like, I feel like I can like keep everyone happy, you know?
I actually really identify with that as well. I'm a very neutral person in things. I'm always like, and I just outright say it, and people want you to pick a side, and I'm always like, guys, I'm neutral.
Like, I can pick sides on things, but I don't feel like I have to, especially if it's like fights between friends that you really care about, you know? Yeah. Who else? Well, okay, so I took a quiz online back, God, when I first started watching Housewives, and I took it like 10 different ways, tried all these different answers. Every time I got Kim Richards.
Oh, sorry. She was actually my, Annabelle said this too. She was,
like an honorable mention
because she was like, you both were stealing from Target and got arrested. And also just obviously the addiction struggles and all that. I definitely, Kim Richards, absolutely on. Yeah.
And I have like very little qualities other than I do really like turtles. I had pet turtles that I didn't find them. I rescued them and like ended up having this like crazy situation.
Crazy.
So I used to do like a lot of HIV outreach in DC and like syringe exchange and stuff like that. And so I was in a certain neighborhood one day and was having some conversations with people, and this guy was selling these like miniature turtles. So he was being really aggressive with like the clients. And so I just tried to get him to stop. So I just bought the turtles and then like continued on, and then was like, oh my God, I have these like miniature turtles. So I went to Petco. I was like, I bought these miniature turtles. Like, what do I do? And they're like, miniature, ma'am. Those are just babies. They grew to be a foot each. I spent so much of my money on this massive tank for them. I had a 75-gallon tank. I had two other roommates. I ended up getting some person in West Virginia to make a custom turtle condo to go on top of the 75-gallon tank made of plexiglass so they could bask in like the special lamp that they needed. I hand-fed them for the first 6 months.
This is too much. That's too much.
I know. When it comes to animals, I'm just very like that. Like with my dog, I'm very like attentive, and like I always have an animal that has like an issue. Like my childhood dog was diabetic, and like I learned how to
dog.
I know. Oh my God. So my parents used to give like insulin and stuff. I learned how to do it. My current dog is like allergic to protein.
What?
So she has to be on like some special. She like can't eat chicken, which is an owl dog food. So she has to be at some like special dog food. I had to like.
I'm like, where are you finding these floozies? Like, what?
Apparently it's a thing with a lot of dogs now where like this one diet just like works better on a lot of them.
Well,
you're like,
I'm probably not one to speak. I'm like, my family's dogs always die like pretty early. So I'm like, maybe, aww. Yeah.
That's okay. Love dogs though.
I love dogs.
Love dogs. And so, yeah. I don't know. And then RIP Kingsley, like thinking of Kim Richards.
Who's Kingsley? Oh my God. Oh, he got put down for sure.
For sure. So I don't know. There's definitely a little bit of like wacky Kim Richards. And then I don't know. There has to be a fourth. I think maybe Tiffany Moon on Dallas.
I don't know enough. I think I watched the first two. I often give them a try too. I think I did give them a try for like one or two episodes. So I got enough. I think I could see that for you.
Yeah, I'm definitely type A. I live and die by my calendar. I mark off everything off my to-do list. Like,
I'm so sorry. I have really loud sneezes. I know.
That was an amazing. That was like the most Jewish sneeze ever. Do you think Jews have louder sneezes than the rest of the population?
Maybe. I mean, I also feel like I get it from my mom because my mom sneezes like that. But what's ironic is a non-Jewish person once told me, and it's weird too, like I'm technically Jewish, but I'm not a real Jew. I feel like you're a real Jew. I feel like it's disrespectful.
There's no such thing as like a real, like it's in your heart.
No, I know. And I am Ashkenazi. So like in that aspect, but no, my friends, actually Blake's mom had said
like Lively's mom?
Yeah. When you sneeze, like you're actually like taking like something about God, like it's God's moment for you to like have a moment and pause and like have something with the earth. So like when you sneeze, she says that like everyone around you needs to like stop what they're doing. And then like you sneeze and it's like a big thing.
Well, because your heart stops when you sneeze. Oh, everything pauses. That. You can't even pee when you're sneezing.
I can't even pee when I'm not sneezing. Like so.
Okay. So do you still watch Beverly Hills? Did you like watch up to the last season with Denise and everything?
That's the one I think if anything, I always kind of stay on. Cause like I said, how I jumped, that was my first one. I think I skipped like season 8 and 9 or kind of, but then
those
the last one
good.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last one I did watch, cause I love Denise Richards so much. And yeah, I watched that.
So what do you think of what's going on with Erica and how everyone seems to always rally? They all seem to like rally around the person who has something to hide and then stop them from being exposed. And that seems very different from a lot of the other franchises.
Oh, the other franchises, like that's my secret weapon. Like, I'm going to yank it out. Here's the thing. I actually don't think Erica knew too much. So I feel bad. She's getting a lot of she gets a lot of hate online. People, this is a big part too why I not only stopped, maybe this isn't why I stopped watching, but a big part of why I kind of have like removed myself from that conversation and like I don't really post Housewives stuff anymore or anything like that is because Housewives fans are really nasty and they don't make it fun. They actually don't. And it's funny because I feel like that's what I used to think about. I was like, oh my God, it's so fun talking about like Housewives and others, but like they don't, and they just like tear it to shreds. And it's like, first of all, you don't even know what happened yet, but they're constantly commenting this, like, oh, criminal, or this, that, and the other. And like, I genuinely just think that she wasn't very involved. I think it was very like, Tom's doing his thing. That's business. She doesn't ask questions. She's doing or whatever. And I don't think she knew very much. And like, maybe that's what's going to come out in the season, but we don't know. But people are just really nasty.
Do you think it's like people being nasty to her, or do you think people being nasty to each other for having different opinions about her?
Both. They're always nasty to her, but people are very nasty to each other. Like, you can't disagree on something. And like, they just make it, they make it not fun. They make it so serious. I'm like, guys, this is a TV show. It's right. So ridiculous. Like, and like, then it comes to the point of like, they hate when people are boring, but then like, if somebody's controversial or whatever, then like, they're a bad person. They should be on TV. I'm like, they're a bad person. They're great for TV. Like, why the fuck do you think they have Love After Lockup or whatever the fuck it's called? Like, what are you talking about? Why do you think everyone's so excited now for Jen Shah and the criminal stuff to see it? What are you talking about? But then like, everyone had a huge issue with Kelly Dodd. I'm like, I think Kelly Dodd's great TV, and I've gotten flack for saying it. I don't give a fuck. So,
you know, it's really interesting because I feel, and I don't know when it happened. Like, I'm trying to think of when the change happened, because I've started to feel a lot of the nastiness and try and like have people on the podcast that have different views than me about right. Kelly Dodd or about Teresa Giudice or any of them, because like, it's not that deep. We're not debating politics or abortion, you know? Let's be able to have a conversation about what we find entertaining, right? And who we like to watch in this crazy game of characters that we see on Housewives. Why do I find one housewife so amazing and you think that they're annoying as hell? That's interesting to me to see the differences of who we like watching and who we feel entertained by.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference between having a conversation and just kind of stating your opinions in a fun, friendly way where you are. Your reaction is almost like, oh my God, that's interesting. Like, huh, it's funny that you see that person that way. Versus like, oh my God, no. And I hate more than anything the whole like team this, team that. You don't have to be a team. You can be team both. There's no teams. I also hate stan culture. I don't agree with any of it. I've said this often. The only person I stan is myself. I think we all should
love that.
Be bigger stands of ourselves. That
do.
Word is
we
gross
need
to me.
To be.
I'm a big fan of myself. I think that's like, it sounds so narcissistic, but whatever. But that's something that's come with me in the past few years and like regaining my life and things like that, and being like, okay, like I'm proud of this person. I think I can create cool things and do cool things and whatever, and sharing my life. And so rather than everyone's just so focused on being these like disgusting types of fans towards these people where it's so excessive and like standing them, meaning like, it's so weird because they'll stand them, which I think the definition essentially means like no matter what, but then they do something, whatever, and they're like, we no longer stand, they're canceled. So then it goes along with the cancel culture thing, which I've spoken about hating.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is very enmeshed in the Housewives world, and I don't want any part of that conversation.
That's fair. I'm just trying to figure out where it went left, you know, because I mean, so I've talked to Steven about this, Faces by Bravo, about how the Real Housewives of Potomac, people were so intensely Team Monique or Team Candace to the point that we just couldn't even talk to each other, right? People just got so heated. And yeah, there was a physical altercation involved, but like, you know, we can move past that, right? It happened.
We've seen it before.
And, you know, exactly. And so, I mean, I don't think it's okay to like
no,
hit
me neither.
People or hurt
me
people,
neither.
But I don't think we need to get so hung up that we're, you know, judging strangers on the internet over it. And so I was like, well, when, you know, and I feel like Beverly Hills, it's interesting that that's the show that you like the most, because that's the one where I feel like the fans are the meanest. They're so mean. It's like all the LVP people were so intense online. And then like, they're really mean to Lisa Rinna, who I think is like a fantastic housewife.
Great housewife. She's, I agree.
You know, I put her up there with Sonia in terms of
me
like,
too. Me
my
too. Like,
top housewives are ones that laugh in their own confessionals. It took me like 7 years to realize that. If they're telling a joke and they laugh at themselves, I find them funny. I don't know what really, that says about me.
Yeah.
I do this for laughter. It's supposed to be funny.
That too. I think also like, to me, I guess I look at it a little differently. Like I think Lisa Rinna, I do appreciate that she laughs at herself. And then I appreciate like other ones of my top housewives are for different reasons. They're more so just because they're monster human beings and they have no self-awareness, which makes for great TV. So there's different things, but I agree that like Lisa Rinna is one of my top things, and Beverly Hills is absolutely the worst fans. And that's why I super, super don't engage. And like, even Kyle Richards gets, Kyle's actually lovely. Someone who I've had that conversation with, and she's actually lovely. And I even think on the show, okay. And like, what people don't realize too with stuff with Kim, like, it's also very difficult to deal with an addict her whole life. We have no idea. So like, I really don't. And like, I'm coming from somebody who like, who was the Kim, and I'm like, yes. No, it's a lot. And so, and Rinna too. And I'm like, okay, then you're going to say this. And she's off show and what happens? And like, I think that happened with Kenya, and she left for a season. Everyone's like, oh, it's boring or whatever. And then like, Kelly Dodd's going to leave. What are you going to do? Vicky left. What are you going to do? Tamara left. What are you going to do? It's all shit. It's like, what do you want? When people say they want Ramona Singer gone, she's my number one. She is the best character work in the entire world. She's so unself-aware, truly a monster. And it's the best. Anything she does makes me crack up. She's like, oh, you know, I don't know. Like, just, it's, I've said this before. People that think that Ramona or Vicky or Terrible Housewife Month of Show do not understand the concept of what Housewives is.
So for me with Vicky, I felt that the issue became where she started thinking she was the show, and she was having too much power over the other women and trying to control the dynamic, where it wasn't allowing a very authentic version of herself to be shown. So I felt like, oh, getting her off the show, but then like, let's wait a little bit. Like, let's see if she crawls back and we can knock her a few pegs down and she's actually showing us her real life again. Because I felt like she wasn't being the same authentic Vicky that we saw for all those seasons. And it was so frustrating.
To me, I see what you're saying. I think it's for a different reason. Because it's funny, like, it's funny too, I guess, even with a lot of Housewives and people are like, oh, early seasons Housewives. To me, it wasn't just early seasons. I think I've said that I haven't watched early season of a lot, but there was kind of a middle ground of like, that was really great. Like, to me, seasons 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 of New York, or and 11, whatever. And like OC season 7 to 11, you know, that's more in the middle. And then it got shitty after. I think with Vicky, it was when she started dating Steve that she started not being authentic. I think that's kind of what ruined her.
Totally.
And she started, like hiding herself.
Because he was judgmental and he wanted a very sort of like, he has this sort of Ronald Reagan persona and he wanted a Nancy Reagan or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just not who Vicky is.
I agree. I think there's still something so like inherently watchable about Vicky that...
She's watchable.
Yeah.
I mean, and we all watch.
It's like they're bringing in other people that sometimes even people that come in and start drama are actually just such unwatchable people just by themselves that you're like, bleh.
Who do you think has been the most unwatchable housewife you've seen?
You mean on Orange County?
And any of them.
Most unwatchable. Oh my God, that's like a major question because I'm cycling through so many.
Cycle, take your time.
Oh God, I'm like, do you have waiting music? Like,
For me, I think it's Carrie on Dallas.
She comes to mind as well. She's very unwatchable.
She creates a ton of drama, but she's not compelling. Mm-hmm. Like, for me, I like watching a complicated woman, like with like good traits, right? Even Ramona Singer, like how she is with Avery, like she loves Avery. There are some kind qualities to her, or how she thinks she's a good friend. Mm-hmm. You know, like even if we don't think she's a good friend, she does. And I think that counts for something. Yeah. So when you watch someone who doesn't really have those good qualities mixed with the narcissism, like I like seeing someone who's really complex, right? Like Luann, you see her as a mother, you see her as a wife, you see her as a girlfriend, a fiance, you see her as a cabaret. Like you see her at all these things and she's a complex character. And so Carrie just doesn't feel complex to me. It feels like this woman who's like still pissed about not having the financial whatever she does in her marriage. And she just complains and says whatever she wants. But it's not fun to watch.
It's good because like I was trying to think and you kind of brought her up. So I think that would be definitely what I would choose. And there's been a lot of ones on Orange County, actually. I know they cycle through a lot. I think like Peggy Sulahian was very unwatchable. I even think like, and nearly not to the extent of like Carrie. No, I didn't want to say that. Teddy Mellencamp to me is very unwatchable. And people always said the boring thing. It actually wasn't just that. She's actually a fucking bitch. Is boring.
How do you know she's a bitch? Have you met her? Interactions.
No, not even, not me, but others.
Others. Are you able to like share an anecdote or like the types of things that she does?
Not necessarily, but okay. But not even that. It's really just even what you see on the show. There's just kind of like this smugness to her and the whole like, oh, there's just a lot of her that's just very unlikable to me, and not unlikable in the way that it's watchable. And so her, Carrie, I'm trying to think about it. I'm trying to go like city by city. Like, let's think New Jersey. Who would be like?
I like the current cast. I think they're all incredibly watchable.
I struggle with Margaret, and I know, or Marge, and I know a lot of people do. To me, she's very try-hard, and it's very, like,
It's just funny, because I know a lot of people that have met her in real life, and say she's, like, exactly like that. She's just sort of like this, like, verklempt sort of, like, Jewish type, even though she's not Jewish.
Type
woman who's making sure that you, do you want the diet soda? Do you want the regular? I've got the regular. Oh, Joe, do you think she got the regular? You know, like, that kind of, and that's an energy that I feel is very familiar to me, and I am drawn to that kind of an energy, and I like seeing it reflected. Like, I like seeing Jewish-y type characters reflected.
I loved Jules on New York. I thought she was great.
I felt bad for her. I really felt like they really went in on her. You know, she was open about her eating disorder. It's not something that you're ever really recovered from. You just are battling it all the time. And she, I don't know.
I think she was actually probably one of the darkest characters we've had on. All cities. Like, it was really dark.
Didn't she put silverware in a calzone so she wouldn't have to eat it?
Oh, yeah.
That is one of the darkest things that's like ever happened.
It's so dark, but also such iconic TV. I was like, guys, I think I one time said, I was like, guys, never forget that Jules steel calzones Weinstein did blah, 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 whatever it's like. But like, that, and then, like, it was really dark last year. She got arrested in Florida. And like,
for hitting her ex-husband.
With the car with the bat, and then like spit on the window. I really read the police report and stuff. There's just a lot of darkness, and like, ooh. I feel like a lot of pills. I don't know. Just it's all really dark.
There's a lot of stuff there. Yeah.
A lot of stuff.
But I felt like she wasn't given a fair shot.
No, I agree. I'm trying to think of other unwatchables. I'm going through, like, city through city. Dallas, you said Carrie. Beverly Hills, I think I said Teddy. I feel like there's maybe been one more that cycled through, but overall, like, pretty good. OC, yeah, like I said, Peggy Sulawesi, and I think some girls from the earlier seasons.
Lydia was my least favorite.
Lydia's pretty brutal for me too. Yeah, I fucking hate her.
I talked about her on the last podcast, how I just, she also just looked like a child next to all these women, and it was really annoying to me. I also tend to like an older housewife or a housewife.
Me too.
That has lived. Sorry. No, shout. I want to hear your opinions.
I know. I've always said that to me, and that was what was so great about, like, New York of whatever, with like Ramona, Sonia, like they're all like in Ramona 63 or whatever. I love like an old broad. So when they were like, oh, let's bring fresh blood like Leah, I'm like, no, I don't want to see my house when I was young. And she totally throws out the vibe. But like when they try to bring in these young people, I'm like, no, like I want to see my Vickies and my Shannons. Like, stop bringing in the younger people. To me, that's what's so great. Like,
The younger people usually comes with younger children, and I don't really want to watch any of that play out. I also feel bad for some of the kids. Like, they don't really get to choose whether or not they're on the show.
No, that's true too. They come with that, but also the younger people come with this like people, they say this too. They're like, oh yeah, you hire younger girls, they're thirsty. I'm like, it's a different type of thirsty. It's the type of girl that's like on social media and they've watched these shows for a long time, and it's very like, and they know the formula so well. You get these old broads, like when Shannon came on, you know Shannon didn't have any fucking idea what's happening. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's really was just like old house. It's there's something different about it. And that's why I think I struggle too, is that they try to bring in these younger people. And not just that, even if they're not younger, I bring up another point that like they've been on for so long that any new people they bring on knows the formula so well. I think genuinely the only person that like really didn't watch before they came on was Denise Richards, which is why she somebody tweeted the other day. They're like, she really didn't understand the assignment. And then I was like, she did. She just didn't give a fuck about it, which is why she was so iconic. But
like,
I
willing to breach her contract, like all of it.
She's like, I'm not doing any of this shit.
She's so funny. No, I think actually going back to my favorite housewife, I took one of those like quizzes of like your top favorite. It's definitely Karen Huger from Potomac.
I like if I were to pick Potomac, like my favorites from Potomac, she's definitely up there, and I think she's a great housewife, makes me laugh. She wouldn't be in my top overall. But I do see what you're talking about, like the qualities. I think there's still something to me in my mind that like that was a JV franchise amongst like a varsity group. So they're also trying to meet.
I love them. And I also love that they're in this area. No. You know, Ashley Darby is the only housewife that is young that I'm like, but she's an OG. She was brought on in her 20s, but she has the soul of a 40-year-old woman. Like she is totally all of her shit is laid out.
It's so funny to bring her up because, like, yeah, before that, I had really not been in Potomac, or before this past season. Sorry, excuse me. Guys don't drink a Spindrift, yeah, and it's unacceptable. I mean, keep doing it, so it's actually me just being rude. But I didn't watch it, and I was like, oh, I the way I view these franchises is like JV amongst varsity and trying to replicate whatever. But this past season, I really did get in, and it was an amazing season. They did so good. And specifically, though, before that, I kept saying, like, I don't want to watch. I remember verbatim, I said, I don't want to watch Ashley Roller Darby. And then I watched the season. She became, like, my favorite. I was like, oh, my God, this girl is such an iconic housewife. And she, first of all, does not break a sweat ever.
No.
And, like, yeah, I would say her. I really loved her. Karen. I love Wendy, who's new. I think Candace is a great housewife. That's the thing, too. People don't realize that. I'm like, she's another young one that actually is a great housewife. Mm-hmm. Her and Ashley are young ones that are good housewives, really.
I think the whole cast on Potomac is fantastic. I did want them to bring Katie back, the original, because she was unhinged. I mean, if she was going
She was on drugs.
Was going through some, like, mental and whatever struggles, like, I would like her to, like, get a little bit cleaned up for her children's sake and for her sake. But for TV's sake, she was a really interesting person.
Yeah, I remember seeing her season one and thinking, like, oh, God, I completely looked at her differently. So I was like, oh, no. When I read that she was coming back for, I think it was the fourth season, I was like, no. And then I remember seeing her and I was like,
yes.
Oh, okay. This is literally a completely different person. This is some insanely unhinged person. And I love it.
I just love Potomac. I do. I feel like, but I want to go back to the stan culture thing because I don't understand stan. Like, I don't even know where it came from. Does that actually the term come from? Like, I know it's like stalker fan, but is it actually from that like stupid Eminem song?
Somebody brought that up recently. I didn't even put two and two together until they said that, and then I never like looked into it. But maybe I forgot. I gotta write that down so I can look into it. But like when I think of when it started, like. When it's like, we've decided to stand. I feel like that was probably like 3 years ago that really started. When you really think about it, though, it is actually so gross. Like, again, we're watching this ensemble of people on a TV show, and it's like funny. And that's what you said to you, you want to watch it to make you laugh. That's why I love watching New York. They make me laugh, whatever.
Oh, there's the funniest.
The funniest. But then when it gets all deep, you're like, oh my God, it's people I stan, and like they're so like it's so gross. And I am gonna once again say that I only stan myself. So yeah.
Well, it's just interesting also to see, I've noticed, and I know you don't follow politics, but I've noticed some people who are housewives fanatics that like are really involved in stan culture start to wade into political things online, and they seem to take the stan mentality to certain political figures.
I agree.
And as someone who kind of works in the political, like it's stanning the political figure is, it doesn't really make sense because you want to thank them for great things they've done, but you want to keep pressure on them to keep doing good things, right?
No, not to get political, but a great example of this would be Trump supporters who so dieheartingly follow him that it's almost cult-like, where it's like they cannot even acknowledge his mistakes, when if it were other normal situations they would, but for some reason there's this like captivation, and they're such a fan of him, which also maybe goes from just where he came from before he actually stepped in office, and like
yeah
and the parade he built around him. They really just became such a fan or stan of him that they excuse all this stuff. And that's a great example. Yeah, politics. It's disgusting.
And I've seen a lot of people do it on the left too. And it's like, okay, like you can like people, you can like vote for them, but the stan cult, this kind of housewife stan culture kind of like bleeding into politics. I'm kind of like, I don't know, guys.
It's funny you bring it up. I'm somebody that's like, I don't really bring up politics, but if it is, like, I'm not afraid to shy away from it.
Oh,
like,
I talk about it all the time.
I really struggle with the far left. And it's somebody like, I'm a registered Democrat and I voted for Joe Biden, but like, and maybe this would be different if I like lived in middle America where the, or where I was like, you know, or a place where like I was around all these like far right people that like it was affecting me and they'd be like, oh, you gay person, whatever. But like, at this point, it's almost like the far left annoys me more than the far right because they, and again, this is somebody that's like on the left, but like,
but you're also surrounded by people that are probably farther left than you.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. And they're so sensitive and they're so like, oh my God. And then, yeah, the emotional like standing and this, that, and the other. And it's just like, oh my God, guys. Like, oh my God.
It's just interesting to me to see because it's like, no, stan culture isn't meant for politics. Like, no. Because you want to keep pressuring them to keep making decisions that you think are best for you and your and society, right? And you can't put pressure on people if all you're doing is saying that they're perfect.
And acknowledging mistakes that are made and saying, yeah. Okay, but exactly. So it's like somebody, and I'm not, again, I haven't followed enough to really know any mistakes that have been made or whatever. But like, so for instance, some far left person that voted for Joe Biden and had he already made some mistakes or a mistake or whatever, they're constantly just like praising. I think there's like something that always comes up in my feed. It's like Joe Biden, daddy, Stan or something like that. And it's like, blah, blah, blah. And like retweeting this and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, he's, and I'm like, okay, like we're happy as president. Like, let's. Let it breathe. Like, they're like, Joe Biden fucking wiped his ass today. Oh my God.
I know.
And I'm like, so did I. Like, so did you. Like, why is it so special that he's doing it?
I wonder how we break down the stan culture, though, especially with housewives, because I feel like, this is my goal. I want to make housewives fun again.
I
have fun with it. I'm like, Bravo should be fun. We shouldn't fight over it. It shouldn't be that deep. We should enjoy it, and we should enjoy this like very campy, silly, unusual shows that we get to watch.
It's tough. It's almost like, I don't know how. And I think when you were bringing up the question of like, when did it become like this too? I think it's been the past few years, but it's definitely been accelerated kind
for
of
COVID.
Since COVID and like all that stuff. And everyone's just, we don't allow anything to be fun. Everyone's so serious and nobody can take a joke. And like the way that people just wanted to cancel every Bravo star for everything that they said, it's just like, come on. If we were to go back to the earlier seasons for all the things that were said, we would have none of the greats on there. Like, what are you talking about? Like, none of them would be on there anymore if we were to call them out like they are now. I think so many people were unfairly fired. It's just like so crazy to me. So it's like, I think we as a society would have to get to a much different place again for that to happen, because now we're just so like the gross term woke and yeah. And I'm just like, guys, like, take a fucking joke. I think I tweeted something and posted the other day where I was just like, and again, I said political correctness is over, guys. We're saying whatever the fuck we want again. I'm somebody that kind of does anyways, and so if I get backlash for it, I do, whatever. But like, come on. And I am somebody that's like, I'm okay with jokes. Like, let's continue making jokes and making people laugh. Like, that's what it is. For instance, like, think about how different it was. This example is used, I think, fairly often as far as like movies that would not fly anymore, like the movie White Chicks. Like, it was all funny and we thought it was funny. And like, now we can't do stuff like that. And I think there's a lot of stuff that like that translates through the Housewives and scenes that we would watch.
And, I think, and I've talked to like a lot of other people about this, about how I definitely want to listen to people who've like are personally affected by things that Kelly Dodd says, or like things that are like really, I don't know, racist or whatever, like seeing how the Housewives of Dallas are treating the one Asian cast member. Like, I want to listen to everything, but I also don't think that, I don't know, my feelings on this keep changing, but I just don't feel like we can hold the reality stars the same standards that I think we want to hold ourselves to.
They're a character. They're a character. That's exactly what it is. And so think about it. How would we have ever watched Bad Girls Club or any of that? Like, I never said, oh my God, I want to be that. If you are so badly looking to model your life after one of these girls, then like, you've got a problem. Like, you should probably fix your own life and like figure things out for yourself. Again, be a fan of yourself and figure things out. Like, that's not, I was never, ever, ever watching or looking to any of these shows or any reality show for a role model or example of good behavior. Quite the opposite.
Yeah. So there's that. But like, so I'm talking about not even when there's like race involved, right? Mm-hmm. So now even when we're talking about that, but when it's like, you know, team this or team that, Jackie versus Teresa on Jersey is a perfect example. I'm team Jackie. I like Jackie. Doesn't mean I want Teresa fired. Doesn't mean I think she's a terrible person. Right. Like I just choose Jackie's side in this argument, right? Right. It doesn't mean like I run a Jackie Stan account, but that's what's so hard for me, especially when it's not that deep, when it's like two women fighting over one saying that the other's husband cheated. Like, we're not talking about race. We're not talking about religion. We're not talking about transphobia or homophobia or anything that like directly impacts any of our lives. We're just talking about something fun, and people just can't seem to chill out.
Yeah, it's insane, actually. I think a lot of that started with like Team Bethany, Team Carol.
I was Team Carol.
Okay, yeah, I was Team Bethany, but it's like, that's okay. We have different opinions. Exactly. Like, that's all it is. People like if I said that to a certain person, they would be like, and I'm like, shut the fuck up.
That's so interesting that it came, because so I was listening to, I think it was just an Instagram Live that two friends were doing, and they were talking about when did Andy Cohn kind of maybe start to slip a bit. And they were saying when it became clear who his favorites were, because it's like we want him to be sort of like one of us watching the shows. And okay. He started being a little bit, and people were saying Bethany versus Carol. He made like kind of who he sided with a little bit more well-known. I actually didn't think so. I think he does a really good job still. I'm still like one of those people who's like, whatever, I like Watch What Happens Live. I like Andy Cohn. I like The Housewives. Like, I enjoy this still.
Yeah, I think that, like, to me, I guess my perspective is he plays fair or whatever. I personally just have never really liked him because I think he's kind of a clown.
He is. But, like, I like clowns. Yeah.
But I actually sometimes like clowns too. I guess I kind of like a, I don't know, he kind of just annoys me for some reason. But, like, I think he's doing his job. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
Do you watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians at all or follow any of that?
I obviously know this is probably a common answer that I used to, and not really so much anymore. So I definitely haven't in recent years. Well, I'm telling you, in the recent years, I really don't watch TV. But
you've been discovering yourself. You've been like working on yourself. So like it makes sense. It's like you're like living reality rather than reality TV.
Well, and I also make it a point, like I would never turn my TV on like during the day or like lay in bed and watch or anything like that. I spent years locked in a very dark room, just like doing drugs and withdrawing. It was very dark and I want no part of that. And so it's kind of like, yeah, like I have a TV and I turn on sometimes before I go to bed, but that's it. There's no like blah, blah, blah. And so I follow the Kardashians through the media. But otherwise, no, I listen to a lot of music. Like when I wake up, and actually knew me, I was dating this guy in the fall, and like, every morning I wake up and I come out to the thing and he'd have the news on in the living room. And I'm also someone who doesn't watch the news. There's that. But I'm also like, why are you starting your day like this? Like, you're starting your day watching this. Like, this is ridiculous.
You would hate me.
And I was like, oh. And I was like, I'm not doing this. I wake up and I immediately hook up my phone to my Bluetooth and I start with music and I just like chill and like, it's like fun music. And
music?
I mean, it's different. I'm like, I have all sorts of random playlists. It's a mishmash of stuff. But
do
like,
you Spotify playlists? Like, I do have, you share them?
I'm an Apple Music user, so I have a lot of individual ones, and I put one out like every month on there. But I have one big Spotify playlist because I know other people obviously use it. But it's like very big and random. It's like 700 songs. The ones like now, I have ones that's like, oh, April playlist, and that's probably like 20 songs. But yeah, so I don't really watch like Kardashians. I've seen the media. I think like occasionally, like I said before, I'll go to bed and like I'm like, if there's something to watch, then I'd maybe put that on or whatever. But yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah.
Speaking of Apple playlists and we didn't talk about documentaries. The best documentary I think I've seen in the last year. I know it's old, but is The Defiant Ones. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it.
Oh my God, it's so okay. It's good. It's four parts and it's about Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine and how they created Beats.
Wait, I'm sorry. I'm gonna add this to my I have a watch list. That sounds so creepy, but hold on.
No. Actually, to anyone listening, so I watched this with my dad and then I rewatched it with my best friend because it was that good. It's a four part series and it goes into like both of their childhoods, what brought them into music, you know, Jimmy Iovine growing up you know, in New York City, and Dr. Dre growing up in South Central, and there in Compton. And then eventually when they find each other, they have a whole thing on, like, you know, the 90s, like, gangster rap, which I'm, like, really interested in.
Oh, I'm
like,
super into,
fascinated
yeah.
in, like, how it all, like, the Source Awards in 1995, where, like, all the beef went down, and like, how they teamed up to become billionaires, right?
Yeah.
And the whole creation of it is so fascinating. It's fascinating to see two people who are such geniuses find each other and stick together and then create something incredible.
I would totally watch. I think when I said, too, that I like to have, like, maybe one scripted show in my life at a time type of situation, it's either that or a documentary. I actually really love a documentary. I've just finished a lot of the ones I've wanted to see. So now I'm kind of like, so now I'm glad you told me this, because I was like left with none. But I usually watch a lot of like Murder of Lacey Peterson, Aaron Hernandez, like Casey Anthony. Like, I love that type of stuff. I'm really into it.
Okay. Well, I'll give you some more documentary. I'll like follow up with
yes,
you, because that's something
yes.
I actually watch. I know I'm really into it. Okay. So I want to kind of go back to Beverly Hills again, and old school Beverly Hills. And just get your thoughts on some things. So, as I was saying, the first few seasons are so dark. But aside from what's going on with Kim, is there another storyline that you remember that you're like, wow, that was actually really dark?
I mean, Taylor's husband was
the first. Insane.
That's the darkest thing I think we've ever had. Sometimes people will say stuff about current stuff like, this is so dark. Or, it's the darkest thing we've seen. And I'm like, does nobody remember that, like, Russell beat Taylor and then he killed himself? I'm like, what are we not remembering here?
That's so wild. I mean, that's probably the darkest, but I also thought how the friends handled it was also very dark. Like, how the other housewives handled it and how they were annoyed with her. But she was kind of acting like how most people who are victims of abuse behave, and they weren't trying to, like, put it all together and support her. They were just annoyed at, like, what she was trying to hide, right? And then what was coming out on camera and how they didn't match up.
Yeah, I felt bad because she was obviously just scared. She was just very scared. So I felt bad about that. I see the Kim stuff dark. Besides the Kim and Taylor stuff, what was dark?
You know what? That hits me differently. So I remember watching season 3 of Beverly Hills and not getting what the big stuff was with Adrian. But now that I'm like dealing with fertility stuff, and there's like a good chance that if I have a child in the future, it may be due to an egg donor would be, I have an egg problem. So like that may be something that I would do. And so this idea that they had a surrogate and didn't want to tell the kids and didn't want it to come out on camera, and that Brandy just blurted it out, is so, I think, very dark and very, like, trying to use someone's, like, fertility issue against them as, like, a negative thing is, but I'm also, like, why wouldn't you tell your kid?
I remember thinking the same thing, whereas, like, at first it didn't hit me as much, and then I rewatched it later and thought, this is a lot darker than I thought. And then I did think, like, well, you probably should just tell your kid for the sake of honesty. But yeah, the fact that it was their choice not to, and Brandy did say it, like, I think that was like maybe 2 years ago that I rewatched that, and I was like, oh.
I was also just like doing a deep dive on Google, and it turns out that it wasn't that they didn't want to tell their kids. It was like they talked to a child psychologist that told them to start talking to their kids when they were 10 about
it. How old were the kids at that time?
I don't know, maybe 6?
You're like, they were definitely not 10.
But I'm also like, there's an age-appropriate way to say everything, but I just didn't like the way that it was weaponized.
Yeah,
I feel like it was way darker than, like, now, like, knowing what people go through with fertility. It's like, oh, my God, like, of all the things.
Yeah, no, it's something that, like, I think even Brandy is like, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. I mean, how is it watching the Kim stuff back?
Like,
I feel like I don't think I fully understood that she was using drugs and drinking. Like, I didn't.
Oh, I
don't
fully
think
understood
I mean, I knew because everyone said it and because she looked weird. But watching it now, I'm like, wow, that was actually bad.
I actually remember very vividly, like, upon first watch when it was airing, thinking that. I think just obviously being in, like, tuned with what happens. Like, I remember thinking, oh, my God, like, we're in that hotel and they're in that hotel in Hawaii, and like
when she was like on the ground,
she was looking on the floor for, I was like, I was doing the same thing at the time. So I was like, oh, like I knew exactly what she was doing. And like when she was searching for her bag, like I picked up on a lot of it and a lot of the bathroom stuff. Like I'm somebody that was always in the bathroom, and like it was all really clear to me. So anytime I've rewatched it, it was like exactly what I thought, I think.
Yeah.
It's all dark though. It was dark then, it's dark now.
It is. I kind of feel though like part of the downhill of Beverly Hills though is her being gone. Like I feel absolutely. Like between her and Kyle, like that dynamic is so interesting. I'm so interested to see Kathy, but I would like to see all three together.
Me too. I was so happy that she came on. I'm like, but I've wanted all three like pretty much since season one. I'm like, now we get Kathy, but we don't get Kim. I'm like, I want all three. Something about their whole family dynamic is very dark, but very interesting to me. And I want to see it too. Like that to me was the core of Beverly Hills.
I'm so interested. And what I really don't like is this like protection thing. I think it started a little bit with Taylor, right? Where they all wanted to protect Taylor. And so they didn't say anything until, and now we said it, right? And then, but ever since then, like there's just certain things that they won't talk about, like Dorit's money issues or, you know, what's happening with Erica. I think they're going to like all rally around Erica. Like they always like choose one person to pick on. I think that's what a lot of viewers are not interested in, is they don't like seeing everyone against one. They like seeing like a different dynamic.
And I agree. I totally agree. And I agree that's changed. To me, there's still something about Beverly Hills that's like somewhat watchable. Although I guess for 8 and 9, there wasn't, like, I really couldn't do it. But also then it's like, then don't watch it. Like, why are you watching it and then being a nutcase on Twitter about it? Like, then don't watch it. Like, I'm so very true. Quick. There's so many people that say this, like, I'm a Lewis fan. Like, I watch no matter what. I'm like, I guess that's not what I am then. Because like, for instance, I said with Dallas or whatever season, I always am quick. I'm like, I'll give it a shot. Salt Lake City, give it a shot. If I don't like it, like, I don't want any of this to be a chore. If I don't like something, like, I'm not going to watch it. If I don't like something in life, I'm not going to do it. Like, I'm a very particular person in general. And so, yeah, if I don't like something, it's not happening.
You know what you should develop? You should develop a housewives guide, like the best episodes for every franchise that people should just pick and watch. Like, if you are interested in the players but not the game, like, you don't want to watch all of it. Because there's a few episodes of Salt Lake City that I think you would really like. And you may not need to see what happened before, and you may not need to see what happens after. But, like, those few episodes are so fascinating.
I think it was, like, maybe 3 or 4 years ago somebody had asked me, and I did compile, like, just a note in my phone of some of my favorite episodes because people would just ask me. So I have something like that. I don't think I'd work on, like, a whole guide, but I do like that idea. I want somebody to do it. But I've done that. I think with Salt Lake City, like I said, I gave it a few.
I just feel like you would like Mary. Like, the more that you saw Mary, I feel like you would really like Mary. There is so much more, like, in terms of an onion and, like, just going through the layers, like there's a lot there.
I think it was also like, I just don't care. Like the ones I was still trying to watch was only because I had like that long-term relationship with them that I'd watched them before. And like, they're familiar people,
it's but also,
I was
already like
losing interest in that.
Yeah. So you don't like, want I any really new don't friends. Want,
no, I was, if I'm already losing interest in the old friends, and like, I tell you, like barely hang on to them. I was like, I don't like, and I think it was during the time I realized too, like, I'm just, it's not, I also was in a much different time in my life when I started watching Housewives, which, as I told you, was like a dark place, whatever. But I also think, like, it's just not as, I think, A, that the program is not as good and whatnot. And I think I'm just not as interested. I think I'm just not as interested anymore. And I'm watching it, I find myself to be bored. And I think it was maybe different watching it on drugs. it's a really big part of it. I think, you know, doing drugs or doing whatever, like, it was different. I specifically remember being like, I'm gonna like get in bed and like do some heroin and watch this, and like, but like everything's pretty great on heroin, so
right.
Yeah,
well, yeah. In terms of being sober now, like, how do you feel if you've watched any of the storylines of sober housewives? Is that something you're like, oh no, now this housewife is sober, like it's not fun to watch? Or is it you like appreciate them showing someone's sort of recovery? Or it's also never clear, like for New York, for example, Luann was kind of forced to become sober. I don't know if it was like her choice. You know, it was like the court telling her. So I don't know. Just wanted your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think in Luann's case, it was definitely like a court situation. I was like, she's obviously getting sober for court, which I've seen in real life and whatnot all the time. As far as seeing sober storylines or sober people, like the odds are if it's somebody that we'd already seen messy drunk, that was probably a lot of their best moments. Then we see them get sober, it can be boring. I think there's certain sober people that just no matter what are still watchable. To me, even Kim Richards, like sober, and I put that in quotes because who even knows, like she is still very watchable. So there are exceptions and there's certain people. It's funny you bring this up because it's not even something it's not something I've even like talked about right now. I think like I've obviously, I still do. I speak a lot about my past and I've been very open about it. I think for a while though, I was very open about like being in recovery and blah, blah, blah and all that stuff. And then like things with me have shifted in terms of like my own sobriety and recovery and things like that. Like I kind of just view things differently or just going through different processes. And so I realized like, I don't want to explain my parameters of recovery to people because it doesn't like mean that it's going to work for them or whatever. So I've kind of like shied away from that conversation a little bit, but I'll just say like, just for the sake of being honest, cause you said like, oh, cause you're sober or whatever. And like what I've, like how I feel like I'm like walking myself into this. Basically what I've chosen to do recently, and this is like while working with my therapist and making a very like conscious decision over a period of time and like doing it structured and controlled, is like I've chosen to kind of start like moderately drinking. And I know it's probably controversial, and again, I've never even said that yet. I don't even think like I know that my family doesn't even know this yet. Only certain people do. But so in terms of like seeing the storylines and stuff like that, I think it can be good, but it can also be like you don't want to model your own recovery off. There's a reason why, like in AA, which is the program I was in, which you're not supposed to say, but I'm saying it now because I'm not in it. I don't know. Attraction rather than promotion. You're really not supposed to discuss it. And that's also part of the reason why I left it. To me, there was just so many kind of
like rules and
not just that, actually rules that were like not followed and broken and weird. And there's a lot to it. It's a whole conversation, but like it shouldn't really be showed because like other people are going to think they're going to model what they're doing. And this is how I do it. And again, sobriety is not a recovery is not one size fits all. It's all very different. And so like, and then there's people that get sober and then they're just constantly pushing it. And it's like, okay, okay, okay. And some of those people might not even be the type of sober that they claim to be. And that's confusing. And like, even then, like people's definitions of sobriety are different. And so I feel like I went on a tangent, but
thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this a lot lately because I watched the Demi Lovato like 4-part series, and she talks about, you know, it was so strict for her, the type of sobriety that was forced on her, and it wasn't her choice, which is why I bring up Luann, that like not being a choice, it's how can you follow something that was like put on you externally versus like a choice that you made internally. And then Demi thinks that for her the best option is like potential moderate drinking and marijuana use. Whereas, you know, Elton John says in the documentary, and he's friendly with her.
No such thing as moderation.
There's no such thing as moderation, but, you know, everything is different. And, you know, harm reduction is also something that I know a lot about, you know.
And to me, Elton John saying that, because I actually did watch, what's ironic is that, like, I actually kind of started going through this for the past few months, and then this documentary came out, and I keep talking about it with my therapist, because she had also watched it too. And I was like, it's so ironic this happened to come out. Because whatever. I think Elton John being like, oh, there's no such thing as moderation comes from kind of what's drilled into his head from AA. And I think they're generally, here's the thing, it does work. And I don't want to say what works and what doesn't. And I think that everyone's different. And I think there's maybe a different severity of addiction or whatnot. Or I'm somebody that realized like, and I think I'm also different than Demi in the fact that like, here's what's weird too, is that like, she did have a lot of like addiction issues even with alcohol and things like that in the past. So hers is a little bit more confusing to me. And then she obviously did have that relapse and overdose and all that. Mine was more so like, and it, I'm almost judging myself saying this, because if I even heard myself saying this a few months ago, I'm like, oh my God, because of like, you know, what I was told from the program. But like, because it's apparently like if you have an issue with one thing, it's with everything. But like, right, looking back, I actually never ever was a heavy drinker at all. Like, so much so that whenever we were like, and like go somewhere, like my mom would always be like, watch Katie and Justin, like your siblings, because like that was just never what it was ever. So I remember I hadn't gone home in like a year when I first got sober. And they were so confused. They didn't realize that when I said I'd been sober a year, that I wasn't even drinking. They just thought like I was clean from heroin. But I had also gotten clean from heroin like 7 months before I like entered AA and got completely sober. But I did have a lot of control, and I've been vocal about that. It was confusing to me, and I think a lot of it was a safety net, and I was still on probation. I wanted to just like, okay, and I did want to take things, and I think it's great, and it did really help me and whatnot. But like, I think there's a big part in them saying that you have no control, but I've proven to myself in many other situations that I have a lot of control and balance in my life. For instance, like, people are like, oh yeah, you can't smoke a cigarette, or pick it up. Like, I smoke like a few cigarettes randomly throughout the year. Or like, I'll be with a friend, I'll like puff or jewel. That's it. Like, I've learned a lot of control in my life, and that's just where I'm at. And so I've been able to like, now a few times, just like one time I was on the beach and I just had a pina colada. And like, that was it. But like, what we're told, it's like, I'm going to do that, and then I'm also going to get wasted, then I'm going to go do heroin, and yada, yada, yada. And like, that hasn't happened. And I think now, right now, I just ended up turned into like a recovery podcast. But like,
hey, I'm all for it.
I just haven't vocalized this yet, like I said, to anybody. So it might as well just explain it. Because if I don't want to like just say a little bit and then not give any more. But yeah, I'm in this place where I'm like, it was a very, very, I don't want to say calculated, but like conscious, thought out, control decision. It wasn't like, oh my God, I relapsed. It was like a period of time that I really spoke to my therapist, and we kind of said like, okay, when will it be the right moment or whatever? And I had finally said like, when it feels right, I will. And I was in a situation somewhat recently and it felt right. And then that's like what I did. And since then, it's important to talk about it and just have a lot of self-awareness about it. And so circling back though, I think that sobriety storylines are, I think I'd rather not see them at all.
I can imagine that. I know people who have either gotten sober or members of their family had gotten sober or battling addiction, and the storyline can be intense and just unearth a lot of feelings.
Yeah, and one actually thing I want to add is too, is that like, I think it's a little bit different in the case of a heroin addict, because like, there's nobody that uses heroin like moderately, or like there's no like casual heroin user type of thing. Like there's reason why they say like, yeah, you use heroin, you get addicted or blah, blah, blah. And like, it's just this kind of thing. I think it's different, obviously, if somebody's like clearly shown that they are incapable of like drinking moderately and have, you know, that's their drug of choice and they're so crazy, then they probably shouldn't be drinking. You know, that's different. I think that I'm allowing myself to give myself a chance to be like, okay, like we can't use heroin. Like that's that. But like, it's a little trickier with that one.
Yeah. It was just interesting because the Demi Lovato thing just came out, and, you know, she's trying to establish a way in which she can engage in certain things that keep her, she thinks, especially with marijuana, she calls it like California sober.
Yeah. Which I don't love that term, because I don't want to identify myself. Like, I would just rather not say sober. I would just be like, I'm living my life.
Right. She was just saying for herself, it's like, it kind of helps her and prevents her from doing other things. But I don't know. I just think it's interesting, and actually wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, I feel like some of the AA and like abstinence only sobriety seems very American in nature. Like in a lot of other countries, that's not, there's not like a one size fits all kind of, okay, you have a problem with addiction, now this is the solution. From, you know, my work globally, I've seen that people have different approaches in Europe and across Africa, Asia, you know, all of that. So I don't know, was wondering if you'd like, while you were doing your discovery and talking to your therapist, if you talked about other methods that people have, you know, tried.
No, and what I want to touch on too really quickly again about Demi is that like she had said like, oh, I'm kind of doing these because they help me stay away from the other ones. My intent is different. And honestly, her saying that it like is a little bit worrisome because it still means she's like trying really hard to. Mine is actually from the opposite standpoint of like, I know that I don't want to do heroin at all. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do any of that. I live such a different life. And so I'm more so allowing myself to just be kind of a balanced adult and enjoy those type of things. And I think a big part was that I realized over the past few years that like, I've been very, every single time that I see my mom, she's like, Jeff, you are so stressed. I'm constantly stressed. I've tweeted this, like nothing has aged me like sobriety. I'm telling you, I'm a very stressed person and like just things. And I kind of just felt like, why am I torturing myself? Why can't I allow myself these little tiny vices? And then what it is too, is that like, then like what people end up doing is like, we have, as humans, we want treats or some sort of feel good thing. But then so when you get sober from drugs and alcohol, you're like, okay, well, I want something. So then they end up going with like food or something. I'm like, but I don't want that. I'm somebody that really cares about my body and being fit. So I don't allow myself that. So then I just end up like having kind of no treat. And I'm not that happy. That's the thing too, is that to me, I'm on a happiness journey. And I actually have not been happy through the majority of my sobriety. I was happy for the first 6 months, but otherwise I've been pretty depressed. And so to me, I'm like, why am I doing this and torturing myself if I'm not even happy? And so I'm on a happiness journey and whatever is a part of that is then so be it. If AA becomes a part of that again, then so be it. But I think before I was on this AA journey and it's like, yeah, I want to just allow myself these kind of things and just be like, okay, like things are okay. Like I'm balanced. I'm doing okay. It's not like I need to do these so that I don't do the hard drugs. That, like I said, her saying that is a little worrisome, but I also don't want to, that's the thing too, is that I don't want to judge. And what I really left behind in the 12-step programs is the judgment, because it's very heavy and it's very strict and it's whatever they program into you. And so to me, I'm just like, I don't judge. And like the best way I could phrase it is that, and this goes for anybody, I'm saying me just in this context, my sobriety, my happiness, and my well-being is between me and me. That's it. And like, that's how I feel about her. And I felt bad that because she's such a public figure, she felt the need to address it. And I've seen a lot of people give her a lot of shit. And I felt really badly for her. Again, like I probably just like wouldn't have said the California sober thing, because then there's a whole fucking mob of sober people that are like, oh my God, that's not sober, blah, blah. So I probably wouldn't have done that. And like, again, there might be things that worry me, but like, leave her alone. We can't ever judge somebody's happiness based on their sobriety. They're not always contingent. So what I think being in the 12-step program, we assume all of a sudden we see somebody that was in the 12-step program before and that we see them with a drink in their hand. We think, oh my God, like they're off the deep end. It's like, we don't know that they're not happy. They could be happy and doing fine. It's not contingent. We don't know that. And so I'm going to end that rant now but I feel it felt good to get all that out.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that. I think it's really important to talk through, for real.
Okay, cool. I'm cutting most of that out.
No, I think that's the best part of the pod. Okay. Truly.
Thank you.
Okay, so I want to end with your pop culture thoughts on some things. Okay.
Cool.
What is your favorite movie from the early 2000s?
Oh my God, that's such a tough question. From the early 2000s.
Okay, you can name multiple. Like,
okay, let's multiple. I don't know how much you see my Instagram, but Fast and the Furious is like probably my favorite movie. Mm-hmm. And I know it's like I'm aware, guys, that like whoever's listening, that like it's essentially kind of terrible. Like I just know that I know what it is, but it's the car thing and whatever. So that. A lot of Brittany Murphy movies. She was actually probably one of my favorites. Just Married, I love. I love Girl Interrupted. I was like, I think
Girl Interrupted is so good.
So good. I think it was 99.
So good.
But Just Married, I'm trying to think of any other like
8 Mile.
I'm like, oh God. Clueless. Well, that was the 90s as well. Yeah. There's other 2000s. Stuff with her. Of course, Love Mean Girls. Love White Chicks. Love The Hot Chick. Love Bringing Down the House.
I loved that. That was with Queen Latifah.
Yeah. And again, would never fly today. None of the stuff. I just rewatched it. None of it would fly.
Oh. It's so interesting watching things back, like, you know, watching even Friends. And you're like, oh my God, those jokes are not funny right now. Or, you know,
just don't fly.
Yeah. Do you think that in terms of like what year would you say was like the height year for pop culture? Like in the years that you've been alive.
I'm telling you, it's so bizarre that you just asked me that, because I actually just released a shirt on my site this week that says pop culture peaked in 2006.
2006. Okay, so walk me through what happened in 2006.
2006 was, for one, the iconic Paris Lindsay Brittany Carr moment.
Oh, I thought that was 2007.
That was before. 2007 when she shaved her head and whatnot. I think when I said 2006, it could probably mix with 06, 07. I think 06, 07 for sure. It was all that. It was Britney shaving her head. It was Paris going to jail. It was like Lindsay going to rehab and getting arrested all the time. That was 2007. Maybe I should change the shirt.
With like Samantha Ronson.
I'm like, fuck, I got to change the shirt now. Samantha Ronson for her was more 08. Okay. I'd say really like kind of 06, 07, whatever. And then maybe a little bit of tailed off, but kind of by like 2010, 2011, it's like, and then now, and that's why I even changed like what my podcast was before. It was like Pop Goggles and like a whole thing into pop culture. And I realized like, I actually don't really follow pop culture anymore. And I kind of think pop culture is dead. I think it's been so infiltrated with politics and the stuff that isn't politics isn't even great. So it's kind of just all culture. So to me it's dead and I'm not really interested. And so I just kind of like nostalgia. Yeah, I don't really follow. I like
mid-2000s nostalgia is like your jam.
Jam. I'm stuck in that time. Even like my car is not from then. It's like it's a new car, but like the type of car it is and everything is like, even your car's like that, the way I dress, what I watch, what I listen to. I'm very much in that time.
You're like pre-iPhone. Is literally, like, and even stuff.
So, people don't understand that I'm very antiquated too. Like, I have an iPhone 8 and people always see that phone. They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, well, because I have a button. I don't want to get rid of it. And I have like, I don't have AirPods. I have wires. I'm like, I'm very antiquated. I don't like, yeah.
You're what we would call a late adapter.
Is that what we call us?
Well, so I was like that for technology, maybe not as late as you, but I was one of the last people in like my friend group to get an iPhone. I liked my flip phone. I didn't want to try Twitter right away. Like, I was so late to get on Instagram. And so I think when like either marketing analysts or even in like health, like when I work in health, they try and, you know, okay, there's always going to be people that'll be like the first ones to do something. Like my dad, he's like the first ones to get the new iPad, the iPhone, the whatever. And then there's people like us who kind of watch like the wave, you know, and there's like waves of people and then like the late adapters. And sometimes we have to, in order to like keep up with basic technology, like you have to get an iPhone rather than a flip phone just to be able to communicate, you know?
Yeah. What's funny is that like back in the day, I was actually, when I was like middle school, early high school, I was so into cell phones. I was like a new one every like 3 months because I'd sell one on eBay and I was so crazy about it. But then, yeah, anything pretty much since high school, I'm very just like, no. I can't. How are you supposed to not have an iPhone with a button? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Hey, it took me a while, but you know, I figured it out too.
People say that though, like you get used to it. I'm like, I don't believe it. Don't you miss having a button? And I've tried using so many people's without the button, and I'm like, I can't even like pick this up.
I like forgot. I don't know. It became so. This is what's scary is it becomes so intuitive that you forget what it was like before, and that scares me. Like, I'm afraid.
I hear that answer a lot with the face thing. I'm like, oh no, you get used to it. Or like, yeah, the face idea, no touch thing. You get used to it. But I finally had a friend who I hadn't seen in a while. And I saw him like a month ago. And I was like, oh my God, you have that phone river. And he was like, oh, you still have the old one. I was like, yeah. And I was like, cause I can't get rid of the button. I was like, don't you miss it? And he's like, Jeff, every fucking day. And I was like, thank you for being honest. All these other people are like, no, you get used to it. I was like, thank you for being like, yes, I fucking miss the button.
I think I just don't remember. But I have some nostalgia though for like, the before everyone was all over Facebook, like before Facebook was taken over by grandparents, before, you know, too many people got on Twitter and it was just like, you know, snarky people having fun. I'm
a big fan of the MySpace days. Big fan.
Ooh. Okay. Well, let's end with you sharing a bit about your podcast because I think it's hilarious. I think you're hilarious. So tell me, like, so it's called Manic with Jeff Epstein. I think your tagline is Let's Spiral.
It is Let's Spiral. Yeah. Thank you. I feel like after that rant, they're like, he's not hilarious. He's depressing.
No, you're just honest. I don't know. All the funniest people I know have dark sides. And the people that don't have dark sides, they do. They just don't want to share them. They're just not brave enough to share them.
I love that. No, Manic is, like I said before, it started off as Pop Goggles. It was like this whole pop culture thing. And then I realized that I wasn't talking about like pop culture stuff, and it shifted into just kind of, for the most part, conversations. And it really did become somewhat of a comedy podcast, which I think when you define it as that, it can be a bit of anything. A lot of it is like insanely, I call them like messy stories and ridiculous things happening. I love when it does tie back into pop culture. Like, we talk about a lot of nostalgia on there. And yeah, it's just, I actually, like, I love doing episodes with my siblings. I'm trying to get it so that, like, they can permanently be my co-hosts. And
oh,
just,
that would be so fun. Your sister's so funny.
Thank you. It's weird because I feel like I almost love hearing the compliment about her than she hears loves it. Because I think hearing her, like, I'm like, Kate, like, you have to co-host with me. You're so funny.
I think that would be great. And your brother's great, too.
He's good. And actually, the three of us is good, but, like, sure. Can you send her a letter and be like, Kate, just fucking do this?
Yeah, I'll send her a DM.
She has no social media, anything. She's more antiquated than me. She sends everything through the mail. Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, you should tell her to listen to this just the last few minutes. And I'm just saying, so Kate, you're hilarious. The people are asking for you.
Thank you. That makes me very happy. There's nothing happier. Nothing makes me happier than when people say, I listen to the podcast and I love your episodes with your siblings. It makes me so happy.
Yeah. No, they're really good.
Thank you.
So, okay, for those people who aren't already following you, where can they follow you? Where can they buy your merch?
Follow me at It's Jeff Epstein on Twitter and Instagram. And then the merch is popgoggles.com, all one word.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. We'll have to have you back for Beverly Hills if you're watching.
I would love to, actually, for sure.
Come back. We will break down an episode of Beverly Hills together. Maybe the season, like the premiere.
I would love to. Don't be afraid to ask me, really.
No, really. I'm going to ask you.
Okay, perfect. I'm excited. Okay.
Bye-bye.